So I'm Brian, I'm an addict.
Hey, Brian.
Ridiculous. Never used one of these things in my life. And so I haven't been to this meeting for years. And I know it's a big meeting, but it looks kind of different from here. And first thing I'd like to say, you know, I'm in the west end of London here, and it's quite likely that somebody may be at their first meeting. And if you are at your first meeting and you feel unwanted, unloved, you know, unhuggable, unlovable, we all felt like that when we first came in these rooms, and I know that I did. Also, I didn't understand the analogies and paradoxes and all that kind of stuff that was going on here. And when I see the steps on the wall, I didn't understand that either. And if it's your first meeting, you've actually done the most important step, and that's that step, the fucking door step. You know, you're in here, and that's what's important. And I've kind of struggled with this thing about being born with a disease of addiction. I don't know. I certainly never inherited it. To the best of my knowledge, there's no alcoholics, no addicts in my family anywhere. My father died when he was 78, and I saw him drink two halves of lager in his whole life. My mum's never had a drink. My childhood, I grew up in a normal household. I went to a normal school. I can't blame my using on an abusive childhood. There was no big traumas in my life when I was growing up. I went to a normal school, and I grew up as a teenager. And I was a 60s child, you know, kind of, you know, drugs was all around me. And I suppose it was inevitable that I would end up picking up some kind of substance or another. And I left school without anything. A resentful headmaster, that was about it. And my first introduction to drugs was, like many people that I know, alcohol. And it doesn't matter to me what the substance is, whether it's powder, liquid, puffs of smoke. The consequences for me are all the same. And, you know, we was naughty boys, naughty girls. We knew what we wanted. We knew how to get it. I started drinking. I started puffing. If I'm really honest about it, which I have to be, I enjoyed my using drugs for a long, long time. It didn't seem to get in my way. But that kind of changed, you know. I believe that we crossed this invisible line, and I stopped using drugs, and drugs started using me at some point or another. I've got a rough idea. I can almost pinpoint it, but I'm at a very big meeting here, and it may be inappropriate for me to share about that. But it was kind of trauma-based with me. And from that moment on, my using went completely fucking mental. I first started freebasing in 1983, and I don't know why they called it freebasing. There was nothing free about it. I lost absolutely everything. I had anything material around me, and, you know, from the outside looking in, I was kind of doing all right at the time. I had a business, some pretty smart cars, a lovely flat, and I was living with my wife, who I loved, and everything went in no time. Sort of 3 months later, the cars had gone, the shop had gone, everything in my flat had gone, and I ended up sitting on orange boxes. And she said to me, look, if you don't stop this, you know, that's the end of the relationship. And that was it, and I stopped. I stopped for a long, long time using kind of freebasing and Class A's, and I went back to puffing and drinking Coca-Cola and not really drinking that much, you know. And I heard somewhere along the line that changing drugs is like changing cabins on the Titanic. And it was certainly true for me. So, yeah, I stopped all the kind of real hard stuff for a long, long time, and, you know, sailed along through my life. But I got myself in lots and lots of embarrassing, humiliating situations. I used to hang out round here a lot, round the west end of London, you know, and I was in and out the kind of club scene, and you know, it started off quite social, really. You know, in a pub, then to a club, then we'd go on to another club, and then we used to end up in a place around the corner called Cavendish Hotel, and then start again. And I remember going to a club around the corner here. It used to be called Stringfellas, and there was this gorgeous girl in there. She looked like Bo Derek. When I woke up in the morning, she looked more like Bo Diddley. That was the kind of stuff that happened to me on a regular basis, you know. I was always getting myself in trouble, and my perception, it just wasn't there. I've always struggled with progression. I couldn't see that I had a problem. You know, a lot of other people around me could, and people was telling me. And I'd actually had it drummed into me, you know, since I was a kid, don't use drugs, but I didn't listen. And yeah, there came a point in my life when something happened and I ended up in a hell of a lot of trouble. And without going into all the gory details, I ended up on the run in over in Marbella, and I was up waiting on a very, very serious charge. I could have ended up with a very long sentence. And yeah, kind of roughly, it was around my missus and something that had happened. And when I hit the floor there, my mate gave me a bag of powder, and he said to me, "Do you know how to wash this up?" I said, "Do I know how to wash this up?" Anyway, 2 seconds later, I was back on the pipe. And within seconds, I was back to where I was, sort of almost, I think it was about 8 years earlier. It got me within seconds. My using just was totally out of control, you know, because of what had happened to me. I didn't care whether I lived, I didn't care whether I died. I became an absolute demon, fiend, nightmare drug user that was best kept away from. I didn't care how I got my drugs, I didn't care who I hurt. I just didn't give a fuck, really, you know. And I left a hell of a lot of destruction behind me. And that went on for a year. I came back to England, went back over to Spain, and I had this get rich quick plan, because I was kind of hooked up with some people, whoever they was, that was really doing okay. 24 hours later, I was starting a 5-year jail sentence in Madrid, and then my drug using progressed even more, because I started doing something that I swore I would never ever do, and that was using smack. You know, before that, I wouldn't even talk to a smack addict. You know, I wasn't a junkie, was I? Anyway, I came out of prison, stayed clean for the last 2 years of my sentence that I was in there, and within 30 seconds, I was back using. Anyway, moving swiftly on, because I don't know how long I've been speaking here, I kind of, you know, I lived a great kind of lifestyle over there, and I'd always been used to nice things in my life, and I ended up living in a squat in Kilburn High Road on a mattress on the floor, surrounded by crack pipes, surrounded by cans of beer. My mate, who was also an alcoholic, he couldn't stand it, and he said to me, "Bright, you've got to do something." You know, by then, the drug-induced psychosis was a daily thing with me. I didn't have a friend in the world. Absolutely nobody wanted anything whatsoever to do with me. And just by pure chance, I picked up a newspaper and had an advert for the chart. It was called the Cabo Nightingale. Now I take a meeting in there. It was called the Charter Nightingale. And there was this advert, cure for crack users, it said. So I rang it up to get cured. I ended up in there. And that was my first introduction to Narcotics Anonymous. It was an in-house NA meeting. And, yeah, cool. I've not been one of these people that came into the fellowship, saw what was happening and got the program and stayed clean. That hasn't been my journey. I've led a very, very self-destructive, self-willed. I've been very, very unteachable. I couldn't see what was going on around me, really, you know. I knew lots of using addicts, and with everything that's happened to me in my life, it wasn't enough to stop me using. You know, I really, really did have to hit a rock bottom, and I spent 13 years in this fellowship relapsing. And that's because I simply wouldn't give in to this program and listen to people that had a better idea and a better knowledge of recovery than I did. I thought the steps wasn't for me and a sponsor. I've had various sponsors over the years and I just wouldn't listen. But I have to say, not one day of me coming to these rooms has been wasted. You know, and if there's anyone sitting in here and you're struggling, it's not a waste of time coming. Mm-hmm. You know, today I'm 30 days away from being 2 years clean and sober, so something's working. I'm working it. My heart's really in what I'm doing today. I have a sponsor. I'm working the steps. I do hand it over. You know, when I need support, I use a network of support. If my sponsor's not around, I'll ring somebody up and share my stuff with another recovering addict. I go to meetings every single day. I'm still doing 1, 2, 3 meetings a day if I have to. You know, I have to saturate my addiction with recovery. That's what I have to do, because I'm under no illusions. This is out to kill me, and it wants to play with me like a cat plays with a mouse in between times. And, you know, I've had some gruesome reminders of active addiction just recently. I don't want to do my recovery sitting in a wheelchair. I don't want to do my recovery laying in a hospital bed somewhere. I don't want to do my recovery waiting for a liver transplant or a kidney transplant. All that stuff happens. You know, I see people die and I see people get clean. The ones that are getting forgotten about are the ones that are sitting in a room waiting for a carer to come around once a week and wipe their arse. That's if the carer decides to turn up. That's really not for me. It doesn't have to be like that. You know, and it's very, very simple. All I have to do is come to meetings, share my stuff and work a program of recovery, which I've been so resistant at for years and years and years. So if anybody's struggling, I don't tell people what to do. You know, they said to me, my sponsor said to me, don't get in a relationship for the first year. And I said to him, who wants to be in a relationship for a year? You know, 3 days is well long enough for me. That's the kind of insanity that goes on around my head. I really don't give a fuck who does what. You know, I don't tell people how to recover. If I'm in a relationship with the right person and it works, it works. I'm very, very careful about who I get involved with. And that's relationships on any level, whether they're intimate, whether they're work, or even just friendships. I'm very, very kind of careful around that stuff, you know. But I really, really do truly believe that nobody in this room wants to see me back out there. And my truth is, if I can't stand the fucking sight of you, I'd rather see you sitting in here than outside there. Just before I come in a meeting, I see a group of people over there. They was all mates, all having a drink there. And one of them was kicking the other one in the face. You know, that's not for me. But that's the sort of stuff that happens out there. 2 seconds later, they're laughing and joking. It's not a joke. This disease kills. It really, really does. You know, it's destructive. And my life today, you know, I can bitch about it all day long. I've got some brilliant fucking friends. Something really touched me the other day. You know, I've been hanging out with some kind of, you know, one guy that I don't know that well, and he rung me up just right out of the blue, and he said, Brian, you're a really good mate. And it brought tears to my eyes. I thought, fucking hell. You know, I don't hear that out there when I'm using. There's no such thing as really good mates. It's all about swapses, exchanges. What have you got for me? You know, what can I nick from you? How can I get my drugs? How can I use yours and then go home and use mine? You know, how long have I got left there?
1 minute.
1 minute, and I kind of wrap up on this. Shame I'm not doing a 35-minute one, really. You know, but I'm an addict, and I love a bigger bite of the cake. You know, one of the biggest rewards I've got from being clean is I have a relationship with my son. He's not around at the moment. I spent years and years and years away from him, and it wasn't a conscious decision that I made. I'm going to use drugs rather than see you. That's what happened. And I've been very, very fortunate, you know. He's over the moon. I'm clean and sober. He's not around. He's in the nick at the moment. But, you know, we write to each other. I'm going to go down and visit him. I'm being a father to my son, and I'm being a son to my mum. that's what really matters to me, you know. And I pray every day of the week, and I really will wrap up on this and not go on for another 10 minutes. You know, I didn't have a God in my life. I pray every single day of the week, every day. You know, I never pray for material stuff. I love nice things. I pray for my well-being. I pray for my friends. And I pray to be a good friend to my friends. That's kind of where it's at for me. Anyway, I don't know if anyone's got anything out of what I've said. And if you haven't, there's lots and lots of other meetings. I haven't come here to speak for NA. I'm just speaking my kind of experience, strength and hope. Thanks.